This week on the Electronic Intifada podcast, 6.5 decades after the expulsion of Palestinians from their land, thousands rally to assert their right of return during the annual March of Return. An update on the ongoing mass hunger strike by Palestinian prisoners inside Israeli jails. New homes for displaced families, yet Israel is still restricting building materials in Gaza. Dozens of journalists and activists arrested as the Palestinian Authority cracks down on dissent. Palestinians are banned from seeking a top student post at an Israeli college. 148 professors sign a letter objecting to a New York Times ad comparing Palestine solidarity activism to Nazism, but the newspaper refuses to run it. And news from the global boycott, divestment, and sanctions movement with an update on the Methodist Church divestment vote by activist and organizer Anna Baltzer. I'm Nora Barrows-Friedman, Associate Editor for the Electronic Intifada in Berkeley. Thousands of Palestinian citizens of Israel gathered in the Western Galilee for the annual March of Return last week on April 26th. Our correspondent Asa Winstanley reported that the march was, quote, timed to coincide with the annual Israeli so-called Independence Day celebrations. Each year for the past 15 years, participants have marched to the lands of different villages destroyed during the Nakba, the 1947-48 catastrophe during which Zionist militias evicted approximately 750,000 Palestinians from what then became Israel. During those years, hundreds of Palestinian villages were blown up with dynamite and demolished. This year, the march ended on land belonging to Kwekat, a village that was ethnically cleansed by Israeli forces in July of 1948. Winstanley added that the march proceeded from a small nearby town called Abu Sinan. Palestinians from all over the parts of historic Palestine, now called Israel, as well as Jerusalem, had arrived in cars and coaches to participate. Palestinians from the West Bank, Gaza, and in exile were not permitted to enter. A handful of anti-Zionist Jews joined in, and activists from Zochrot, Remembering in Hebrew, the organization set up to educate Israelis about the Nakba, were also in attendance. Teenagers and youth led energetic chants against Israel, calling for the full return of Palestinian refugees, naming all the towns and villages of pre-1948 Palestine that the refugees would return to, and singing freedom songs. The march went on despite the March 2011 amendment passed in the Knesset known as the Nakba Law. The ruling makes it possible to fine any public body that benefits from government funding, such as schools, universities, and local authorities, if it holds events that commemorate, quote, Independence Day or the day of the establishment of the state as a day of mourning. Adela, the Legal Center for Arab Minority Rights in Israel, filed a petition against the racist law, but in January of this year, the Israeli High Court ruled that the law could stand. Ongoing coverage of actions on the official Nakba Day, commemorated on May 15th each year, will be featured on the Electronic Intifada in the coming weeks. An estimated 2,000 Palestinian prisoners in Israeli jails and detention centers remain on mass hunger strike in a collective action to demand basic human rights and to bring world attention to Israel's policies, especially the use of administrative detention, which is arbitrary imprisonment without charge or trial. The strike began on April 17th on Palestinian Prisoners' Day, with more than 1,000 prisoners taking part. We continue to follow the hunger strike protests and some of the thousands of prisoners who are amongst them. Two Palestinian men in administrative detention, Bilal Diab and Tha'er Halahla, began a hunger strike 2 months ago. As we reported last week, an Israeli court denied their appeals and the hunger strikes continue as their health rapidly worsens. Both are now in Ramleh Prison Hospital. This week, the Electronic Intifada's Ali Abu Nima reported that two human rights organizations have warned that Bilal and Tha'er are both at grave risk of death unless urgent action is taken. Additionally, they are being denied both family and lawyer visits and being subjected to mistreatment and denial of necessary medical care. Physicians for Human Rights Israel, in an email to diplomats, stated that, quote, the hunger strikers are blocked from all contact with the outside world in an effort to break their spirits and their nonviolent struggle. It is alarming to see that medical professionalism and ethics are severely compromised and lives are put at risk for political aims. Tha'er and Bilal's medical condition is a testimony of how serious the danger is, end quote. For more information on the ongoing hunger strikes, visit electronicintifada.net/tags/hunger-strike. Writing from the Gaza Strip, our correspondent Rami Al-Megari reported that more than 200 homes have been rebuilt with foreign aid after the original homes were destroyed by Israel in the southern Gaza Strip. 223 new houses have been built by the UN Agency for Palestinian Refugees, UNRWA, with the support of a $7.2 million grant from the Netherlands that also funded roads, water infrastructure, and an electricity system. During the past 8 years, Al-Maghari reports, one of the families that will get the keys to a new house had moved from one rented home to another, including a 2-year stay in a 16-square-meter store with 9 family members after their original home in Khan Yunis refugee camp was destroyed by Israeli bulldozers in 2004. Other housing projects underway include ones funded by Saudi Arabia and Japan. However, according to a UN agency official, these vital housing projects are still short of raw materials, which Israel restricts from entry into the Gaza Strip due to the 5-year-long blockade. Dozens of activists and journalists have been arrested during a recent uptick in censorship and repression meted out by the Ramallah-based Palestinian Authority. The Electronic Intifada published a report by Gillian Kessler-Damour, writing for Interpress Service, that Palestinian Authority security forces recently summoned a 23-year-old student at An-Najah University in Nablus for interrogation and was accused of, quote, creating disunity through his political cartoons. The report adds, quote, PA security forces have arrested dozens of Palestinian journalists, bloggers, students, and activists in recent weeks. Many have been detained for statements they made on social networking sites like Facebook that were critical of the PA, while others were targeted for articles and other work they published. In the northern Galilee region of historic Palestine, Yara Saidi reported this week that Palestinians have been barred from running for election for the post of student union president at Zifat Academic College in Safed. A decision taken by the students' union at the college on April 18th has made running for the union's top post conditional on having served in the Israeli military. Palestinian citizens of Israel, of course, do not serve in the Israeli army. Therefore, this condition is inherently designed to overtly exclude Palestinians. This step is only one in a long series of discriminatory and racist practices which Palestinian students at Zifat College have been confronting in recent years, including, Saidi reports, a rabbinical decree instructing Jewish residents in Safed not to rent houses to Palestinians, violent attacks on Palestinian students, and the burning of their cars. Last week, the New York Times ran an advertisement paid for by notorious anti-Palestinian racist David Horowitz, which named individual faculty members at several U.S. colleges and accused them of inciting murder of Jewish children and likening the movement to boycott Israel to Nazism. Following the publication of the ad, 148 college professors around the U.S. signed an open letter objecting to the ad, but the Times has refused to print it. For more on this story and to read the full list of signatories, visit Ali Abu Nima's blog at electronicintifada.net/blogs. And finally, in news from the global boycott, divestment, and sanctions movement, the Irish band Dervish announced on April 30th that it has pulled out of a series of Irish music concerts in Israel this June so as not to violate calls for the cultural boycott of Israel. Quote, at the time we agreed to these performances, we were unaware that there is a cultural boycott in place. We now feel that we do not wish to break this boycott, the group said in a statement on its Facebook page, adding, quote, our decision to withdraw from the concerts reflects our wish to neither endorse nor criticize anyone's political views in this situation. And Palestine solidarity campaigners celebrated news that a UK supermarket chain, the Cooperative Group, commonly known as the Co-op, has decided to expand its boycott of goods produced in Israeli settlements on occupied Palestinian land into a complete boycott of Israeli companies that source any goods in settlements. On Wednesday, the United Methodist Church voted on a major divestment initiative that would have pulled the church's financial ties to Caterpillar, Motorola, and Hewlett-Packard, corporations that sell equipment, technology, and communication systems to the Israeli military. The divestment vote ultimately failed, but a resolution on boycotting Israeli settlement products did go ahead, and campaigners are looking towards the bigger picture. For more on this story, we go to Anna Baltzer, organizer with the U.S. campaign to end the Israeli occupation. We caught up with her as she was getting on a plane from Tampa, Florida.
So yesterday was a pretty incredible day with a lot of ups and downs, and The resolution for divestment from Caterpillar, Motorola, and Hewlett-Packard that had been brought by the United Methodist Kairos response in response to the Palestinian Kairos-Palestine document that was calling for boycott, divestment, and sanctions did not pass. However, we actually had a number of victories yesterday and also along the way. And so one of the really exciting things that happened is prior to the divestment vote, there was a resolution brought to the table that affirmed the Kairos-Palestine document that actually cited, you know, U.S. funding and called on nations to prohibit financial support for the construction of settlements, the import of products made by companies, and said actually in particular that the United Methodist Church does not support a boycott of products made in Israel, but the oppositionist products made by Israeli companies operating in the Palestinian territories, the occupied Palestinian territories, so basically implying that they do support a boycott of settlement products, and also urging the government to, the U.S. government, to end military aid to the region. So actually it was about both boycott and sanctions, so the B and the S, even if not the D. And that passed, actually, was it? It was really an incredible thing to witness as delegate after delegate stood up to support that resolution, and many more standing up to support as well the divestment resolution, which didn't pass. But we had speeches from delegates around the world. The first to speak was a South African delegate who talked about his experience in South Africa and the importance of supporting divestment, someone from the Philippines, a student of Beth Corey, the cousin of Rachel Corey, and even a young woman who talked about the way that many youth are straying from the Methodist Church because they are seeing moral inconsistencies in the church. So it was an incredibly moving thing to witness and to see the truth being spoken there on the ground with so much heart and love, with thousands of people watching there and around the world, was really incredible.
And finally, the Presbyterian Church is gearing up for their own divestment vote, very similar to the one that was proposed at the United Methodist Church Conference. Are you more hopeful about the Presbyterian Church, or what's the next step? What are you looking at?
Well, we're gonna hit the ground running with this one, and there's a lot to build on, a lot of lessons learned, and also a lot of momentum created by the Methodist campaign. And there are people around the country who are now mobilized and excited to support the campaign. The Presbyterian Church is historically a more progressive denomination, and so there's some hope in that too. But generally speaking, we don't see this as a defeat. We feel that there were a lot of victories along the way, and I'd actually like to end the podcast, I know this is short, with actually what happened after the vote yesterday when the divestment resolution was shot down. And that is that really what happened with the divestment resolution fit into a larger overall sort of conservative slant to the conference, with a lot of resolutions with concern for people of color, international delegates, women, LGBTQ communities, and others had been shot down. And so as soon as the resolution was shot down, all of a sudden, from all corners of the room, people began to walk slowly, steadily to the center and walk down the aisle and sing Wade in the Water, the old gospel song. And if you can imagine voices from around this huge room coming together, holding hands, people were crying, walking down the aisle as delegates watched, and then a mic check talking about the importance of global equality and anti-racism. And it was really quite an extraordinary way to end.
That was Anna Baltzer of the U.S. campaign to end the Israeli occupation. To learn more about these campaigns and for more BDS news from around the world, visit electronicintifada.net/tags/BDS. And that's it for our weekly Electronic Intifada podcast. For news, information, analysis, and action alerts by our team of correspondents and bloggers, to send comments and to sign up for our daily newsletter, please visit us online at electronicintifada.net. You can also follow us on Twitter @Intifada. On behalf of all of us at the Electronic Intifada, thanks for listening.